Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner.
McCarthy.
What's that again?
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And we are here to continue our conversation about the aftermath of Boston and looking at it in depth from many different perspectives. We're about to have a conversation with Darren Samuelson, a senior policy reporter for Politico. Rob Call joins us as well, publisher of www.opednews.com, which I read every day, host of the Rob Call Bottom Up radio show and writer for Huffington Post. And Jeffrey Simon will be joining us as well. He is author of Lone Wolf Terrorism, Understanding the Growing Threat, and president of the Political Risk Assessment Company, Inc. And Darren, Rob, and Jeffrey, welcome. Good to have you all with us.
Thanks for having
me here.
And before we jump into this part of our conversation, I promised one of our listeners who did not get in that she could have a quick say. Let's go to her and come back to the heart of this conversation. Marie in Baltimore, you're on the air. Hi, Marie, you there?
Yeah, I'm there. Welcome, everybody. Listen, I kind of got into this late, but about this country accusing certain groups of doing things which they hadn't done, and the media came out immediately and said that this probably were Muslims or Arabs or whatever. If you notice that the Arab Americans and African Americans have hyphenated titles, there's some reason why we're hyphenated. And I expect this to continue on. Back in the 14th and 15th century, according to exhibit I saw in one of the museums in Baltimore, that Europeans had not cared for Muslims in the very long past, you know, before. And I don't think they're going to change. And they will be blamed for things that they didn't do, and so were the African Americans. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Marie.
Thank you, Marie.
So let's go to our and folks, you can join us here at 410-319-8888. We'll take your calls right to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. We'll also kind of look on our Facebook pages and see what you have to say. Both of you, Rob and Darren, have written pieces. And one of the things you talked about in your piece, Darren, was is this going to be the new normal post this event, lockdown,
yeah,
and everything else? But expound that a bit before we turn to Rob.
Sure. The thinking goes that a whole city was pretty much put on lockdown on Friday as the police and local law enforcement, state, federal, all kind of were on a dramatic search for the bombers. And, you know, we had not seen anything to that extent before, after 9/11, if you think about it. I mean, people were free to walk around the cities of New York. I was here in Washington. You know, I was able to get relatively close to the White House myself just as a reporter that day. But here we were on complete lockdown, and, you know, we didn't know if there were going to be more attacks on 9/11, and yet it seems like here today, you know, with someone on the loose, it seemed like that was the call, and there was some questioning of it. We found some Democrats, former Senator Jeff Bingaman from New Mexico, kind of wondered if it was a little bit too far. We heard from a Bill Richardson writer who thought as well, a little bit too far. But then, you know, a lot of others that we spoke with said that this was the right decision to be made at that moment.
And Rob, you wrote an interesting piece about this as well. And you clearly think it was not the right decision to make.
Absolutely. I want to say, by the way, Darren did a great job on his article.
Yes.
Collecting a lot of responses from different people. I really believe that this is dangerous. This is a threat to our freedoms. And now that's the kind of thing that you usually hear libertarians say. And I'm not a libertarian by any means. I just believe, though, that when police and leaders like governors or whoever makes those decisions decide they're going to shut down a whole city, a whole metropolitan area, close to 5 million people being told stay home, and then they suggest that it's just a request when there are all these police out there, it's dangerous. It's dangerous to the future of the America that I grew up expecting. It's like Darren said, in previous occasions, when there's a danger, when there's something going on, they shut down a couple blocks, a little area. To do the whole city, it's sloppy, it's lazy, it's paranoid, and it's a level of control and an attitude towards the people that is unbelievably unacceptable. And I say that because it's cavalier. Oh, you got a problem? Well, we you know, one of the police suggested that they did it so they could send more police to where the danger was and take them away from their usual beats. Oh, right. So we're going to shut down a part of the city so that we can put more police somewhere else. This is just madness. And it is something that I really believe there should be a huge outcry against what happened there. We need to make our cities safe, but that's not the way to do it. That's the way to destroy the American way.
Before we let you all jump back in, I'm going to invite and welcome Jeffrey Simon, author of The Lone Wolf Terrorism, Understanding of the Growing Threat, with us here. Jeffrey, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I don't know if you heard part of that interchange we just had about the lockdown.
No, I didn't. I didn't hear that.
Well, in essence, even though you haven't been writing about that much, it was the lockdown, from one of our guest perspective, Rob Call, was just a mistake, was overkill and dangerous.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because basically what happened was that demonstrated the power of terrorism, how a single individual on the run could lock down, you know, shut down an entire city. And my view of that was that it gives ideas to other kinds of terrorists and extremists, maybe not to the extent of shutting down an entire city, but that through certain acts of violence, certain reactions by government and everything, you can create that kind of scenario. But that has happened in the past. You know, it's always a fine line between how do you respond to a bombing, what do you do in terms of policy responses, but we never had something to that extent, and the whole world actually watching this unfold.
I guess this is Anthony McCarthy. I did get a caller on my show on Friday who made the point, when a lot of callers were calling in and saying, well, you can't shut down Boston, and Bostonians are strong and they bounce back, and you can't slow our American ideals. Well, then a caller came in and said, wait a minute, the entire city of Boston and some of its suburbs are shut down.
Exactly.
And so I found that a very fascinating thing. But the flip side of this, I would ask Rob, Jeff, and Darren as well. There is always a place where if something were to, of God forbid, happened again within hours of this initial bombing, where there could have been criticism leveled that not enough was done to shut down the city, to go control people's movements so that the law enforcement could do their, in many cases, in some neighborhoods, go absolutely door to door to door to door doing searches.
Yes. Basically, I think one of the issues also was the shutdown due to the manhunt for the suspect, or was it because they thought there were IEDs in place in the city, mm-hmm. you know, that may explode? Because we've had a lot of incidents where a bomb goes off, something happens, the suspect's at large, and the cities don't, you know, close down. But I think it was a tough decision for the, you know, the police to figure out what to do. But it would be interesting to find out what was, you know, the critical point there in shutting it down. The manhunt, he was so dangerous that he's going to put other citizens at risk, or they had to find him to find out, did they plant IEDs throughout Boston?
Well, one of the things go ahead, Rob, is that you?
Yeah, it's Rob. You know, the idea that it was a tough decision for the police, I think there was a tough decision for whoever made the decision, and they blew it. They didn't take the tough decision. They took the easy way out, which was, well, we need to decide what areas to shut down, and they shut down everything. Now, what's next? Shutting down a state? It is an unacceptable response. We are a people that have a right to be out there. And there are risks every day. There are risks you're going to get run over. There are risks you're going to get shot. How many people get shot every day in Chicago? There is no way that the police can justify, or a governor or a mayor can justify, shutting down such an area. Now, when I wrote my article, I said that it was unprecedented, and a couple of writers suggested that whole cities or city areas had been shut down during riots in Detroit or Los Angeles. And even then, there were smaller areas, and it was massive chaos there. It was not one 19-year-old kid on the run.
Well, yeah, we had an interesting case here in Los Angeles way back in the 70s. His name was Muharrem Kubekovich, and he was called the Alphabet Bomber. And he set off a bomb at LAX that killed a few people and injured a lot of others. And he played with the media, leaving tape messages saying there are other bombs planted. And he said the next bomb is going to be in a locker. He wanted to spell the name of his fictitious group out, he said, you know, in blood. So L.A. didn't shut down, but there was incredible fear throughout the city. People really weren't going to any public events. But in that kind of case, you know, they couldn't make a lockdown because they didn't know how long it was going to be before they can find these bombs.
So we're going to go open the phones here, but one of the, and see what our listeners are thinking about this. One of the things that was written in the Progressive the night of the event was that there are people who are worried that this becomes policy, that martial law is something that, not that something I would not say is waiting in the wings, that the government's waiting to take the democracy away and shutting America down, but that as they quoted a former NSA whistleblower, William Binney, who said they have the possibility that all the apparatus of a police state is in place, we're just waiting to turn the key. Now, how real is that, do we think? Rob?
I'll take a swing at it.
Okay. Darren?
Yeah, good.
Darren, go ahead.
I mean, one thing to kind of keep in mind, going back to Boston, is, I mean, it wasn't a mandatory lockdown, something to keep in mind. I mean, people were free to go out and about. Obviously, you were probably going to subject yourself to additional scrutiny by law enforcement. I remember watching on one of the shows maybe around 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday, the gentleman who had biked too close to where the police lines were, and he was just sitting there on the curb with nine police with guns drawn. But, you know, there were people out jogging. There were people out and about in Boston, and you certainly were not mandatory ordered to stay locked down. And obviously, you know, once the order was lifted, just to kind of keep in mind, I mean, once it was lifted, you did have someone who ultimately was able to finger where the bomber was located. So clearly, you know, there is something to be said for the argument that maybe having more eyes and ears on the street was not a bad thing. But you got to, I think, also kind of put yourself in the shoes of the law enforcement at the time with you know, first and foremost, protecting public safety and not having, you know, people out there when bullets are flying on a city, you know, on a suburban street. You know, you just don't want people standing on street corners when bullets are flying, and there's a shootout between. At this point, there was one gunman, but that, you know, they did not know, I guess, that there was, you know, other accomplices out there in other parts of the city. So, you know, a lot of uncertain questions that ultimately led to this decision, and that's, I guess, why they think that they, you know, made the right call, you know, in the heat of the moment.
Rob, you want to comment?
Rob Call, opednews.com here. Now, I cover activism. One of the things that Op-Ed News does is we cover activists who are protesting, and what we see is every day, all the time, police abusing their powers. And we have a crime problem, but we also have a police problem. If you look at how militarized the police have become, it doesn't take much of a look to feel like we're in the middle of a police state, especially when there are protests like against G20 or something like that. What worries me is it's not just about when something big like this happens, but every cop watching this is looking at it thinking, oh, they can shut down the city. I can tell people what to do, too. And we see it. We know that there are hundreds of thousands of stop and frisks happening in New York City, for example, and the police are getting more and more brazen. And I am worried that all of these actions are setting precedents that are going to happen again and again in other situations, not just in the United States either, because the United States sets the example. If the U.S. shuts down a city, then we're going to see that happening in other cities all over the world.
Let's open the phones here, 410-319-8888. Clarence, you're on the air. Clarence, you're on the air. Clarence, you there? Turn on your radio. You're on the air.
Thank you, Mr. Stein. Thank you, Mr. Stein.
Welcome.
Yes, I'm here. I'm here, Mr. Stein.
Go ahead. You're on the air. Turn on your radio.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I think that the police up there, every one of those police officers should have known after the fact, after they figured out who they were looking for and had pictures of them, exactly who they were looking for, and should have had it in his head. When that individual that I saw, who I initially thought there was a third person, was laid out on the ground with 10 police officers pointing their weapons at him and then he was made to strip nude and led away in an armored vehicle. That was absolutely ridiculous, because at that point, they knew who they were looking for. They had already been identified. Now, that is, it really kind of, you know, turned me against the whole thing, because every one of those, like I said before, should have had been able to have identified on site those two individuals. Thank you.
Thank you, Clarence. Anthony.
Well, one of the things I found interesting, Mark, I think people were talking on social media about that particular situation, and some law enforcement experts, certainly Jeffrey and Rob and Darren can comment about this. People were saying that he was made to strip naked because there was a real concern about his body being booby-trapped.
Exactly. You're right.
And so the police were taking measures before they actually got on him or close enough to him to be able to observe whether or not his body was, in fact, booby-trapped.
Right.
And so I understand people's discomfort with it. But, you know, it was an extraordinary situation. And I know there are parts of the world, Mark, where we're going to get callers who will say, this happens all over the world, every day. Why are Americans so up in arms about one incident? Well, regardless of it happening in other places, this did happen.
When it comes to looking at the world of terror, if we go to the next caller, and what these brothers motivated them or what didn't motivate them, there's a lot of talk in Congress right now that from some quarters, both Republicans and Democrats, who are questioning the FBI, who are questioning whether or not the FBI has done their job in terms of follow up with at least one brother who was. Who was pointed out by the Russian government, and kind of John Moffat in your at Op-Ed News, Rob wrote about, and we hope to have him on the next couple of days. Wrote about the problem is that we're focusing on the wrong things. We're focused instead of focusing.
Absolutely.
On, go ahead.
As John wrote, we had 15 people killed in Texas by a company that lied about what its safety situation was. It lied about having explosives. Now, you know, you call this kid a terrorist without really knowing much about what's going on. That's what most of the media are doing. But what about when you have corporations that cause mass murder like this? And why was it that the mainstream media hardly paid any attention at all to a horrible disaster that did blow up a whole community and a nursing home? This is a real problem that we have. And what John wrote about was that, you know, when you tie terrorism to it, it gets sexy. It has an allure, an attraction.
Well,
that,
I think it's hard to deny that what happened in Boston was not terrorism. I mean, you know, we get hung up on definitions of terrorism, that you have to have a political, a social, or religious objective. But sometimes when the effects, such as what happened in Boston, regardless of what their motivations were, it was an act of terrorism. And I think what you're getting at is, you know, in terms of something that happens by accident, you want to put the blame on corporations, which you're entitled to do. But the reason the whole media and the whole world and everyone went back to Boston was that was what was a man-made act of violence. And here, I mean, you're getting a second degree in terms of what happened in Texas. Texas was definitely a tragedy. And had Boston not occurred, the Texas story would have been the mainstream.
See, I have to disagree with you entirely. I believe that what happened in Texas was entirely man-made, and there are criminals at fault, and they should be getting treatment that's just as severe as the suspects in Boston. There were people who made decisions about safety, who made statements and lied, and they are just as guilty. And corporations do this all the time. It's kind of bizarre how we do this thing in our heads where if an individual does it and kills some people, that's terrorism. But if a corporation routinely does it and does things that cause tons of death, that's business. That's a corporation. Well, during Occupy, there was a great sign that people would put up that said, "I believe that corporations are a person when Texas executes one." Because, you know, corporations are treated with the same rights as humans. It's called corporate personhood. And corporations can do really bad things, but it's people who make those decisions. And so there were people in Texas who did this. Now, the thing that I think really got everybody's media attention was It was a fugitive at large, and chases always get everybody. It's what so many movies are made of.
But this is totally different. It wasn't just somebody.
Is this Darren? Go ahead.
Jeff,
I'm sorry, Jeff.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I mean, this wasn't somebody who held up a convenience store and the cameras were watching him on a car chase. This was one of the more major terrorist events we've had in the last couple of years, mesmerized the entire country, and then the suspect's on the run. I mean, it was just natural it was going to be top news 24/7.
So,
did you say that he robbed the 7-Eleven? Because we now know he didn't.
No.
I didn't say that.
I said that it's not the same as if somebody robs a 7-Eleven
and then
is on the run, or somebody here in L.A. We always get these helicopters finding these people, who carjacked a car, and they're on a pursuit. People watch it, but this was a whole different story there.
So let me open the phone to you again. I have another question just about the FBI and who our government is watching. 410-319-8888. Gene, you're on the air. Hi, Gene, you're on the air.
Oh.
You're on the air, Gene. Go ahead.
Oh, hello. Gene, you're on the air. All right, hang on. Hi, how are you?
Very well. Welcome.
My question, if you will, is one of the your panelists disagreed with the fact that they shut the whole city down. But I think with a city that big, when you're looking for a fugitive or fugitives, that it's like a shell game if you to, kind of weed through the flow of all of the people. You know what I mean? So when you shut the whole city down, I think you could probably get to your target a whole lot faster than trying to, sort through everybody that's in and out. What are your thoughts on that?
Thank you. I mean, you're obviously saying that you think that the shutting down Boston was the only way you could do it, and it was the effective way to do it, to capture who the bombers.
Rob Cole here. Can I say something?
Please, Rob, go right ahead. I figured you would.
Sure. So you're in Baltimore. This was the case for somebody who bombed and killed some people. That's the first time. That's the precedent. What about the next time if somebody shoots somebody? Should they do it then? How about if somebody robs a grocery store? When it's a slippery slope, and once you create a precedent, it makes it easier for people to do it. How many days of the year would it be okay for you to have Baltimore shut down because the police felt it would be easier to capture somebody if they did that? Now, I'm taking it to a bit of an extreme, but that's the way that this system works. We lose our rights. They're eroded every day by people saying, well, that's okay. And that's why when I wrote my article, I finished it with a quote from Benjamin Franklin, who basically said, if you give up a little bit of liberties here and there to be safe, you're going to have no liberties left.
This is Anthony McCarthy. Jeffrey, I want to ask you, and of course the other guests chime in. I found it fascinating to watch some of the Sunday morning talk shows and listen to some of our political leaders. Senator Graham from South Carolina was very critical of this administration, saying that we should have known something was up with these young men from their trip abroad, and that we should have been watching them as soon as they came on the radar screen. And he was asked, well, where do we draw the line and who do we begin to surveil in this country before we become something that we criticize around the world? I wanted to get y'all's thoughts on that. There was a lot of talk about these young men should have been on our radar screen.
Well, they did get on the radar screen in terms of, I believe, the FBI had interviewed the older brother, but I think it was before he made the recent trip to Russia.
Yeah.
I mean, the question becomes how much are you able to monitor the activities of somebody if you didn't find anything in terms of being suspicious? If it turns out that his trip over there did result in his becoming further radicalized, or he did have meaningful interactions with militants, is one thing. If it turned out he really had almost no contact there and just went back there and came back, then they had already, you know, done their job in that first interview. But this is going to come out in terms of whether there was key information that they let go. But, you know, a lot of lone wolf terrorists, and these are two brothers, and if there's no extra support out there, we can call them two lone wolf brothers, basically. The radicalization process happens in many different ways. It could happen through the, you know, the internet chat rooms. It can happen, you know, via personal incidents that put somebody on a path. And it's really difficult, you know, trying to protect everyone's civil liberties and then, you know, monitoring, you know, everybody and anybody that you might think is a terrorist.
Darren, just to close out, because we haven't heard from you in a minute, your thoughts on what you've just been listening to?
You know, it's a fascinating debate. I think that we probably, you know, can armchair quarterback forever. Being in the shoes of the law enforcement on the ground there is, you know, kind of impossible to do. And, you know, I would just kind of repeat, I mean, if you think about, you know, the way that the rest of the week went, I mean, it really didn't reach this point of a lockdown until Friday, after the events that happened in terms of the shootout after the carjacking. I mean, this was, you know, the city of Boston was open for business on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I mean, President of the United States and all of the, you know, concerns security-wise that go into, you know, bringing President Obama into Boston, you know, were deemed enough that he could be there on Thursday and then people could be around, you know, him and floating around the city of Boston. And it wasn't really until we reached this point on Friday where, you know, they had actually smoked out the alleged bombers that, you know, that they had to make this decision. Will it happen again and again? I mean, I think each circumstance is going to be different.
Right.
But I will say this. One other thing is, you know, I just think back to after 9/11 and living in Washington. I mean, they told everybody who works downtown, I work a block from the Capitol, you know, that you should pack a bag and sort of have it ready at your disposal that you might need to be locked down in your office, you know, because something happens. And so, you know, I packed a bag. I got a, you know, a bucket of water. I probably need to replace it at this point. you know, they told you to do it, and I think a lot of people were smart to probably do it.
Darren Samuelson is senior policy reporter for Politico. Rob Call, publisher of www.opednews.com, host of the Rob Call Bottom-Up Radio Show and writer for the Huffington Post, and Jeffrey Simon, author of Lone Wolf Terrorism, Understanding the Growing Threat, and president of the Political Risk Assessment Company, Inc. Thank you all so much for joining us here on the Mark Steiner Show.
Thank you.
Can I say one last thing, Mark?
In 10 seconds, we have to go to break.
Go ahead.
After they ended the lockdown, it was a person, a bottom-up person, who identified the suspect. It wasn't the police that did it. It wasn't the lockdown. It was after the lockdown was over.
Thank you, Rob Call. Thank you all three of you, being Darren and Jeffrey. We'll be talking to you again soon, I hope, and thank you very much for taking your time with our listeners. We're going to take a very brief break. When we come back, we're going to take a look at both what happened in Texas and a conversation about Chechnya. Stay with us. Don't go away.